Monster Man, Episode 213, Jan and Jelly Comma Mustard. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at two monsters from the J chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, though, I've got some business to take care of. First off, if you're interested in historical miniatures wargaming, then you can find an article that I co-wrote together with Dr. Gianluca Racogni in the October issue, that's issue 384 of War Games Illustrated. It's about smaller keeps in the Crusader States. You can also check out a bonus scenario that we wrote related to that article on the War Games Illustrated website. So if you like medieval miniatures gaming, then please go ahead and take a look at that. Second, I gotta thank some new patrons. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if you pledge to support the show, you can get a range of bonus content. At the $1 level, you'll get occasional bonus episodes I record, both of this show and of Patron Deities. At the $2 level, you'll get all regular episodes of Patron Deities, my show about the Deities and Demigods book. And at the $5 level, you'll get the chance to choose a topic of your own for a special bonus episode. I've got a lot of new patrons to thank this week, which makes me really happy. So thank you to Matthew Edwards, Ernest Hardy, John Cullum, Ray Hinojosa, Wes Carden, Andrew Petrazzi, Andrew M. Reichert, and Tobias Clover. If I've mispronounced any of those names, I apologize. Either way, I thank you very much for choosing to support Monster Man. All right, let's talk about our first monster for this episode. That is the Jan. Now, a while back, I did a special episode on Jean. You can go back and listen to it. And one of the things that I discovered is that all the various names for Jean are used kind of unscientifically. So whether they're called Jin or Jan or Marids or Ifrits, there's no real consistency to it. Attempts to categorize, you know, oh, well, a djinn is like this, but a Jan is like that, and an Ifrit is like this. Like, Ifrit are usually evil djinn, but that's kind of the one main distinction. So here, what they've done is they've said that a Jan is a genie that is made of a mixture of different elements, because we know that the djinn are made from smokeless fire. In D&D, we learn that each different type of djinn is made of a different element, but the Jan are composed of an intermingling of elements, and therefore they live on the prime material plane. Essentially, they're material creatures a bit close to humans. They're kind of the most human scale of the Jin, and we see that they live in villages, and they have a hierarchy, and they're basically sort of like a tribe. And I like that idea. That sounds like a tale that a neighboring tribe would tell. Oh, those people over there, well, they're weird. They're descended from a genie. They do have some quite genie-like powers, so they get things like they can become invisible, they can enlarge themselves or shrink themselves, they can become ethereal, and so on. I also really like the illustration of this guy, who has a fantastic helmet and curly mustache, and clearly Jim Holloway has gone and, you know, looked up some reference material on, like, medieval or post-medieval. It looks quite Turkish to me. Armor and weapons, so that's pretty cool. Even if you just went and looked at some sort of Orientalist paintings, that would be pretty good. Since, I mean, really, that's our visual look of the djinn in the first place. So I like the Jan, because when you bring in a genie, you know, ultimately that story's going to center around the idea that it grants somebody three wishes. The Jan kind of allow you to have these supernatural beings that are almost a little bit closer to a lot of the stories that are told about djinn, but, you know, without the wish-granting aspect. You can imagine that all of those djinn that live down the well and love to hear readings from the Quran that I discuss in the djinn special, you know, in D&D terms, are more like Jan. So, yeah, I quite like the Jan. They're cool. And I definitely like the idea that, like, other villages have weird rumors about them. You know, they sort of live in remote places to be away from humans, presumably because humans are suspicious of them and their magical powers. Next up, we have the Jelly, Mustard. So the Mustard Jelly, I wonder if this is a gotcha monster for the Ochre Jelly. You know, I think the idea is that when this creature oozes into the room and some wiseacre goes, aha, what color is it? You go, that's kind of a browny yellow. And they go, aha, okay, like ochre, I get it. It's an ochre jelly. And we know what an ochre jelly does because we've memorized the monster manual. Well, guess what? This is a mustard jelly, and it's a bit different. Faster and more agile than most other types of jelly monsters, so kind of there to keep the players guessing. I go back and forth on how I feel about these types of monsters. You know, I don't like gacha monsters because they proceed from a premise that I'm not super excited about in the first place. Recently, in the 5th edition D&D game that I play, our characters ran into a beholder. Well, actually, it was something called a mind witness, which is a different type of beholder, apparently, but that I don't really know anything about. But it was constantly like, you have to have this little struggle, which is like, well, I know how to deal with a beholder, right? I know that you have to get out of the anti-magic cone at the front, and I know that you want to stick close to the paladin because of the bonus he gives to saves, and so on and so forth. But my character doesn't know any of that stuff. He's never heard of a beholder. They're not, like, common or anything. So, to me, the problem almost goes the other way, but here we clearly see, here and in monsters like the Adherer and the various kinds of hags and so forth, I think we're seeing attempts to catch out players who are so familiar with other types of monster that they're, you know, using knowledge that it doesn't make sense their characters would have. Or maybe, you know, to put a more charitable reading on it, just an attempt to keep things fresh. So that when you see something, you're like, oh, an ochre jelly. Well, no, it's not. It's something a bit different. So you no longer get that sense of, like, boring familiarity when you encounter a sort of browny-yellow ooze. The one thing that I'm not too sure about, well, there are two things that I'm not too sure about with the jelly, mustard. First, mustard? Am I going to put it on sausages? But the only part that seems, I mean, I guess it's mustard in the sense that it's mustard-colored, but the other part that says mustard about the jelly, mustard is that it emits a toxic gas. It emits mustard gas. And that's a little weird. I get it. You know, I get that on an absolute level, there's no difference, right? This is a game that is full of violence, and people that are stabbed with a sword die, and in the real world, people were frequently stabbed with swords, and they frequently died. I'm aware that there's no reason for me to be weirded out by this other than the childish principle that says that killing a fantasy person with a sword is okay, but killing a fantasy person with poison gas evokes weird memories of the First World War. But nonetheless, when we're talking about aesthetics, we're talking about our gut responses. And my gut response is that mustard gas is a real weird thing to have in your D&D game, and kind of, like, inappropriate? I mentioned earlier in this episode that I enjoy historical wargaming, and obviously historical wargaming involves the recreation and sometimes even the celebration of conflicts that were horrible, you know, for the people involved, you know, victims of violence, including civilians. You look at medieval warfare and, you know, it's full of fascinating characters and dramatic incidents and so forth, but, like, at the root of that are real people who suffered and died. So it's weird that I'm able to maintain some level of scholarly and or hobbyist distance with that, but not with, like, the First World War. I know people who are big into miniatures wargaming but will only play fantasy games precisely because the recreation of real-world violence that had real-world consequences is a little off-putting to them, and while I don't share that view, I certainly understand where they're coming from. Anyway, somehow, mustard gas as a little bit of a goof is a little creepy for me, but I get it. I think this is a perfectly fine monster. I might just change the mustard coloring on it, you know? And just say, like, yeah, it's an ooze, it emits a toxic chemical, and that's it, that's all you need to know. Anyway, that's a minor point, but the jelly, mustard just made me think of it. All right, now that's all the time that we have for today, and that's all the time that we have for the J chapter. In our next episode, we're going to be moving on to K and talking about the Kampfholt and the Ketch, or possibly the Kech, on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.